Hello, I'm Ellen Bintz. Today I'm in Wheaton, Illinois in the USA. Welcome to Impact, a podcast about how we can each bring about real change in the world and getting practical in making that happen.
And hello, I'm Clive Johnson. Today coming from Saltdean near Brighton in the UK. A special welcome if you're listening for the first time, and a big thank you to our new subscribers. Each week, we look at one aspect of how we can connect our hearts to offer healing for others with our collective intention, prayers, and meditation, and go behind the headlines of a critical happening in our world that needs our attention right now.
In today's episode, we take one of these regular deep dives to more fully understand and tune in with something many of us may know only a little about and see where we might hone in with our prayers and intentions. And as we record, it's April 10th, 2024.
And in this special episode, as Global Healing Response moves its attention from water to earth and Earth Day approaches, we take a look at our vital dependency on and our responsibility for caring for the element called the hard, solid constituent of our planet that includes rocks, the soil, sands, and the great shifting tectonic plates that move imperceptibly below our feet. Earth includes all the minerals we use to build our homes and create the things we consider necessary for our lives. It includes sources of fuel, such as coal and other minerals, such as aluminium. We might extend our definition to include products that start as solids, but have been made into gas, oil, and the myriad chemicals that are the building blocks for life. When we think about the Earth, we might think about standing on firm ground, having a place where we can root ourselves, and most critically of all, a place we can call home. As we said in our introduction, we are ourselves on different continents, different land masses formed by the tectonic plates and separated by a vast ocean, which itself is quite a thought.
And, you know, Clive, I have to say, when I travel to Europe, it does feel different to me. There is a different feeling. I'm wondering if you feel that when you come to the U.S.
I do. Absolutely. I do. I think each place has its own energies and, you know, its memory, which is built up over not only millennia, but within the rocks and the sand and so on, tens and millions of years. Yeah. Just as you mentioned that, actually, it took me back to a wonderful, beautiful experience I had. And we were talking just before coming on to the recording about the total eclipse that many in the US and Canada and Mexico have been blessed to witness this past week.
Yes.
And that kind of appreciation of Earth's place in the cosmos, as it were, that comes with that, and the fact we are on a spinning Earth that has a place in relationship to the moon and the sun and the planets and the stars. And yeah, we're very small upon it.
Yes. And how important that all is.
And how important it all is on the mystical side. But I remember probably one of the most beautiful experiences I can ever remember traveling some years ago, being with a wonderful group of storytellers. Well, it started out as a storytelling stroke earth connection retreat in the Sahara Desert in Morocco. The first only time I've ever been there. And this was led by two wonderful professional storyteller teachers based here in the UK. They're both from Israel, actually, originally, but Carmit is based in Spain now. But they teach regularly at a place called the School of Storytelling, which I'd been personally associated with over some time. And they were a group of folks like me who love learning and telling stories and learning about storytelling. But Carmit's special interest, we should really get her on at some point, I think, was in earth energies and how we relate with the earth. And her co-presenter, Roy, we met in Marrakesh, big city. He got ill. So unexpectedly, he had to drop out as really, you know, one of the main, well, co-hosts right at the start. So we adapted to a slightly different agenda when we got out into the desert. We were staying this retreat. It was in winter, which is a great time to go to the Sahara because during the daytime, it's nice and warm. At night, it gets cold. You have to prepare for that. But all of the animals, the insects, the scorpions, the spiders, the snakes, and all of the things that you might get worried about in the desert, they're all hibernating or not there.
Perfect.
Which was, I thought was perfect time to visit. So we could enjoy ourselves. But it was a lot of it, this place was an oasis, was around a connection with the earth. And there was a place there I went, and you would look one, we were creating stories based on what we saw. And there was sand. These were very close to what you imagine the Sahara to be like, really quite impressive sand dunes. I was looking at the sand, and I was on the edge of, right on the edge, sitting on the edge of this, I guess you'd call it a reef, kind of like a bit of a curve on the rocks. And you could look at the rocks on one side, and there were some fossilized imprints in there. And on one side of the rock, these had no limbs, the fossil imprints. On the other side, they did. And at night, I had this really good sleeping bag I had. So I was going up on the top roof very often, because this was miles away from any light pollution. And the star show every night was just spectacular. Of course, looking at these other planets, well, looking at the stars and you know, imagining that there would be planets and so on around them, just brought home to me this mystery of time and how things form over millennia. The rocks on one side of this reef, very, very ancient. On the other, more recent, but still millions of years old. The sand, younger, it's been ground down over many, many years. And then staring out into the heavens at night. That was just such a magical, mystical,
wow,
appreciation, I think. So yes, you were just bringing that home, just talking about the continents there. I don't quite know how I went there. Anyway, I'm really going on, aren't I? Really ranting.
No.
I'm not going to do too well on keeping our podcast of 20 minutes. With
yeah. Well, in our Labyrinth Activist Network circle, we have a book club too. And we just did the book Awe. And your story would fit perfectly within the book and the wonder of awe. I highly recommend it to our listeners.
Wow. Yes.
And there are different ways to experience awe. One of them is to be in awe of our universe and the world and, you know, the geography. So
wonderful.
That made me think of that.
Yes, so, yes. Beautiful. I
recommend that book. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking if we put that in the show notes and
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be good to do. Yeah. Hmm.
So as our regular listeners will know, the focus of this year for the Global Healing Response and the call for action and resource base for supporting intention-focused events created by me 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago, is our planet. And each quarter this year, the GHR is turning the spotlight onto one of each of the four main elements that enable life on our planet. And for the second quarter of the year, the focus is Earth. So check out the website, globalhealingresponse.com, for more information. And I provide suggested prompts for prayer, meditation, and more. And we'll put that link in the show notes too.
Absolutely. Definitely recommend checking that out. Some excellent resources there. So this month, on the 22nd of April, this month of recording, I should say, you may be listening, who knows when, is Earth Day, which is marked on the 22nd of April every year, organized by a movement called earthday.org, whose mission is to diversify, educate, and activate the environmental movement worldwide, aimed at bringing about transformation on a massive scale and recruiting millions to this important environmental cause. EarthDay.org aims to hold sectors accountable, and so this is in government, in industry, and so on, for their role in our environmental crisis, while also calling for bold, creative, and innovative solutions. Earth Day has been marked each April since 1970, so more than 50 years now. And this day honors and celebrates our remarkable planet, a reminder of the importance of environmental conservation and sustainability, encouraging us to come together and take action for a healthier planet and a brighter future. And its special focus this year includes demanding a 60% reduction in the production of all plastics by 2040. Now, Earth Day does concern our Mother Earth, so kind of not just the element of Earth. It concerns what many of us like to call and know as Mother Gaia as a whole, including the rivers, lakes, seas, oceans, atmosphere, and fiery magma. So you've got all the four main elements, and I guess we can add ether as well to that. The ever-changing, infinitely varied, and complex interplay and dependency of life and life cycles of which we are all a part remind us that our Mother Gaia is a living organism.
So what about the element and specific building block of Gaia called Earth? What should concern us? So as humans, we have a total dependency on the land. It's the thing that we all have in common, right? Everybody, mm-hmm. everybody on this planet, which is where we farm most of our food, build our homes, and spend most of our lives, or all of our lives, unless you know Elon Musk, right? It is on solid ground that we feel most secure and rooted. Yet we instinctively know that we can never take the earth below our feet for granted. Earthquakes, volcanoes are reminders of the awesome power of our planet and the ability to transform the surface below in an instant. Global warming is drying our fertile lands. Trees uprooted from the rainforest of the world are leaving impoverished soils, and we continue to mine mineral resources at an astounding rate. Since our current preferred lifestyles are dependent on many of the actions that we take, we're often failing in our duty to care for the earth, as we all know.
So what should concern us? As if we need to ask that question, really. But what struck us in researching this episode is just the sheer variety of ways in which we are impacting on the earth. And we thought we'd just pick up on a few examples to illustrate some of this variety. So one example is how mining impacts on the habitats of other creatures. According to a recent paper published in Science Advances, up to a third of Africa's great apes, I'll say that again, up to a third of Africa's great apes are threatened by a boom in mining projects for minerals required for renewable energy transition. An estimated 180,000 gorillas, bonobos, and chimpanzees are at risk due to an increase in demand for critical minerals such as copper, lithium, nickel, and cobalt, the study found. Many of these minerals are needed for clean energy technologies such as wind turbines and electric cars, but which are leading to the destruction of tropical rainforests, which are critical habitats for Africa's great apes, especially in what has become a huge mining boom across Africa. Africa is mineral rich compared with many other parts of the world, and so has been targeted for mining aimed at increasingly renewable energy production. And there's some geopolitics involved as well in why African countries are being targeted as well. The West African countries, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Mali, and Guinea have been especially active in new mining activity. So in Guinea, for example, more than 23,000 chimpanzees, that's 83% of the population, could be directly or indirectly affected by mining activities, according to the research. This, in turn, is harming apes through habitat loss, pollution, and disease, while also making habitats more accessible to hunters and farmers as roads are carved out into the forest. More than two-thirds of primate species are already threatened with extinction. Excepting apes, the research also found that around 20% of mining areas overlapped with regions that are considered unique for biodiversity or labeled critical habitats. So this balance between reducing reliance on fossil fuels in response to the climate crisis is at the same time, through this mining activity, threatening the very existence of our own closest relatives. Dr. Jessica Junker, a lead researcher of the conservation organization Rewild, said, "In its current iteration, it may even be going against the very environmental goals we're aiming for. it is crucial for everyone to adopt a mindset of reduced consumption.
What a dilemma.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, you know, we're trying to create clean energy and it's causing this other problem. It reminds me how everything is so in balance and, you know, you tweak one thing and something else goes off and it's...
And populations, those countries, their economies, the employment, the investment they can attract, being dependent on this as well.
Yeah.
And of course, we're not looking at this generally, I think, from a global perspective. It's country and country. So I don't know, countries like China, especially investing very heavily in Africa. There's no global initiative to control and regulate this.
Oh boy, as we move forward, we know that minerals help fertilize crops, but they can also add to global warming. But we do have some good news. Mining below the North Sea off the Yorkshire coast extracts a mineral called polyhalite, a dark gray composite of potassium, magnesium, calcium, and sulfur. Polyhalite is a natural fertilizer, nourishing crops such as potatoes, vegetables, and fruit. As a fertilizer, it is a good alternative to potash, which takes much more energy and chemicals to process, whereas polyhalite requires very little processing. Fertilizer production is one of the big contributors to global warming, contributing around 5% of greenhouse gases. Polyhalite helps plants use nitrogen more efficiently and so reduces the release of such gases. It's hoped that it can be increasingly replacing potash as a fertilizer. Good move. That's a good move. I hope there isn't any other secondary problem with that.
No, it seems it's a very simple process, as I understand it, compared with making other fertilizers. And it's being done on an incredibly large scale. These huge mines go literally under, as you say, they go under the sea for miles, actually. It was really quite a mind-opener seeing some of the photographs. You know, there's little trains that take the workers out, the miners out, and bring the potash, polyhalite back. Like we might imagine, traditional mining was done way underground. And yes, seemingly big expectations for this to become perhaps even the main way of fertilizing the land.
Yay.
To another continent, another massive continent, Australia. Country that is associated, I think, with global warming quite a lot. But the warming of the Australian interior, which is mainly desert, has recently been found to threaten the ability of soil to retain carbon. This is new research by Curtin University that's shown that Australia soil could become a new carbon emitter due to extreme heat and drought, meaning that the country will fail to meet its COP climate goals. The study forecasts that beyond 2070, carbon loss in the centre of Australia will not be able to be contained due to drier and hotter conditions. Australian soil will then be a net emitter and could account for between 8.3 and 14% of Australia's total current emissions by 2045. Soil helps to keep the planet cool by absorbing carbon. However, as the climate gets warmer, its ability to retain carbon decreases. Australian soil holds an estimated 28 gigatons of carbon. This is a huge, huge amount.
Wow.
It is extraordinary, isn't it? Unless farming methods are further improved so farmland soils can continue to store carbon, any gains and benefit will likely decrease by 2045 and worsen in time if the Earth continues to warm at its current rate, according to Professor Viscara Russell, one of the study's authors.
These dates aren't that far out.
They're not, are they?
We're not talking hundreds of years.
No, absolutely. And it seems almost irreversible, doesn't it? It's very hard to see how this can be contained. And indeed, it seemed to be being sped up as the climate warms. It becomes more difficult to retain the carbon.
This is an interesting story that Global peace is directly related to having healthy soil. So in January this year, in a speech at the World Economic Forum conference in Davos, Switzerland, our U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, warned that soil health is increasingly a matter of national security. He highlighted the domino effect of soil degradation with its impact on hunger, natural disaster, trade, and migration, saying that getting seeds and soil right is critical for meeting many of the challenges the world is facing. Degraded soil leads to crop failure and famine. It can also worsen the impacts of droughts and floods, prompting mass migration, friction, and wars between countries that are competing for the dwindling resources. Very much like we've seen with water in our focus last quarter.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Of course, it makes sense, you know, when you think through the consequences. But when you first hear that healthy soil can, you know, jeopardize security, you think, what? But then
it's a major issue. And again, combining this with water, again, the UN really raising this as the sort of number one area of focus, wasn't it? In this year's World Water Day, I think, was on security, global security, not just providing clean water and so on. So exactly the same with the earth. And good that that was at least being highlighted at such a senior level in Davos this year. I don't know what the outcome was, having said that, but at least it's on the agenda.
Yes.
Now, a recent United Nations report warns that around 6 billion tons of sand is being dredged from the world's oceans every year, equivalent to more than 1 million dump trucks every day. And this, in turn, is endangering marine life and coastal communities. Sand is the most exploited natural resource in the world after water, being used to produce, among other things, concrete and glass, of course, essential in most modern-day city construction. The UN Environment Programme, that's UNEP, likened the dredging by some vessels to giant vacuum cleaners, dredging not only sand, but billions of microorganisms that fish feed on. It says that life may never recover in some areas. The scale of environmental impacts of shallow sea mining activities and dredging is alarming, said Pascal Peduzzi, head of UNEP's Analytics Center in Geneva. The marine environment must be given time to recover, he said, adding that it's not sustainable, as large vessels are basically sterilizing the bottom of the sea by extracting sand to the bedrock and crunching all the microorganisms that are feeding fish. UNEP recommends that sand dredging should be banned from beaches to protect coastal resilience and economies, and calls for a moratorium on dredging to allow the marine environment to recover. The South China Sea, the North Sea, and the US East Coast are among the areas where the most dredging has occurred, according to the UN report. And perhaps, ironically, in the quest to increase renewable energy production, sand plays an essential part in construction, as we mentioned, in infrastructure such as hydroelectric dams and solar panels. My goodness, this, how do we square that one again?
So again, we're in a dilemma.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. I had not thought about that sand dredging. I guess I didn't think about where the glass and the concrete was coming from.
No. And to appreciate sand next to water being the most exploited resource on Earth. Yeah. We might think of oil or gas.
Right.
My goodness. We need to pay attention to this one as well.
Yes. You know, as we would like to say, we need to decrease our consumption, but as this says, we need that consumption to create the renewable, I guess I'm glad I'm not a scientist or in the mix of the geopolitics right now.
Yes, absolutely. It's very complex.
So finally, we might want to reflect on our own dependence on the natural element of Earth and express gratitude in our own way for the support, grounding, and provision of this most essential element.
I must say every time, well, not every, most time I do a meditation or host a meditation, connecting with the earth, connecting with Gaia, and having an initial focus on, you know, each one of us is physically connected through our feet or our seat bones, whatever it is, always feels very important to me to establish a grounding before I can start to think about, as it were, my spiritual grounding, having that physical rooting, that sense of being held, almost as though you could plant your feet into the ground, like a tree, like a plant, and connect and draw on its nutrients.
Lately, I've been thinking a lot about gravity.
Ah, interesting.
And, you know, the metaphor of it holding us all together.
Yes.
You know, and how really amazing that is, that it holds us. Gravity holds.
Yes. And we are just the right mass for the gravitational pull to be held. As we were talking earlier about the miracle of the earth and the moon.
Yes.
And the sun, and it's kind of the same dynamic, isn't it? This beautifully worked out.
Amazing.
It is amazing. It is extraordinary. And I don't fully understand it, I have to say. How that happens. And we have freedom of movement, of course. You know, that's mm-hmm. the beauty. We can lift our legs. Well, those of us who are physically able can do that. And some of us, I think, can swim in wild waters and run triathlon.
Well, actually, one of the things I love about running is that when you run, most of your time is in the air.
Ah,
your feet off the ground. So it's really the closest thing you can do to flying as a human.
Amazing. That's quite
something. Some of us are a little bit more off the ground than others, but I do have that feeling when I run. I do concentrate
on that.
Wonderful.
That's must be a beautiful one once you get into a rhythm mm-hmm. of doing it. I was thinking there of, I used to do quite a lot of horse riding in the past. Mm-hmm. And a horse, we call it the canter in the UK. I think it's more called the lope, isn't it, in North America? But it's one of the so-called gaits, the movements of a horse. And for a long time, there was it the canter or the gallop? I can't remember. It might be the gallop, actually. There was debate about whether a point in that movement, all of the legs of the horse were off the ground. And it took photography, you know, and being able to show in very slow motion exactly what's going on to finally prove that, no, actually the horse does have one foot on the ground at one point. But obviously when they're jumping and so on, they go in the air. So I had that lovely image when you were talking about running of horses galloping across across the plain.
Sometimes I do look like a horse galloping.
Yeah. Well, it'd be a bit worrying if you were cantering, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a three-part movement. At least three legs to do a canter, I think.
So where might we focus our attention as we reflect upon humans' varying ability to exploit Earth's minerals in damaging or beneficial ways? We suggest holding as our focused intention this week. We will that scientists, environmentalists, governments, and all who have influence will be inspired to discover and promote projects that benefit rather than harm life on Earth.
Mm.
Please join us in holding this.
Mm. Definitely needs our really strong focus. We say this is complex, isn't it? Given the balances that are going on as well.
Yeah.
It's around security and our desire to move towards renewable energy and so on.
And besides holding this intention, we can think like we did with water, you know, even taking shorter showers and the simple things that we can do. What are the little things that we can do? I'm committed to using less plastic.
Mm.
That's what I'm going to be focusing on and trying to create a habit of eliminating the plastic, or at least reusable plastic instead of the one-time use plastics that are so detrimental to our environment.
There were some quite scary statistics you came across, weren't there, on this?
Oh, topic. I did.
Yeah.
1 million plastic bottles are purchased every minute.
Wow.
Every minute worldwide, while up to 5 trillion plastic bags are used a year. These statistics are from earthday.org. If you'd like to go there, you can find them too. global plastic has reached an estimated 460 million metric tons in recent years. And it's estimated that 75 to 199 million tons of plastics are currently in our oceans.
That is staggering, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And this one really got me. An estimated 9.7 billion cigarette butts are littered in the U.S. every year. 4 billion of these are in the waterways.
Wow.
And that comprises nearly 20% of all litter.
Just cigarette butts.
Cigarette butts.
My goodness. So combined with the plastic, this is incredible, isn't it? What humanity is, how we are damaging on such a massive scale.
Absolutely. And how easy it would be to rectify this.
Yes.
Do something.
Yes. Just as you say, just each one of us. I'm sure many of us have with, you know, reusable shopping bags and this kind of thing. And perhaps, you know, plastic bottles, reusables again and so on. I'm probably pretty guilty on that, though. I'm not very good with taking a recyclable mug to a local Starbucks. It's what's a new one, usually.
There you go. If we all did that, it would make a difference.
It would. And there's some financial incentive, isn't there, I think, to do it as well, but when you do it, usually. But no, just needs a bit of preparation, a bit of thought, and perhaps making it more of a habit, really.
Mm-hmm. I was impressed. I heard a story that the Muslim community in Ramadan right now, they have committed to eliminating one-time plastics when they get together for their meals. Iftar, I think it's called, when the sun goes down, and they often do that in community. Mm. And they made a commitment this year to reduce the single-use plastic or eliminate it from their meals as they gather.
Setting a real example, isn't it? Because a lot of these community events use a lot of plastic. Everything is disposable plates, or not everything, but often disposable plates and cutlery and bottles and so on is used. And or maybe going back to using traditional crockery and then again, I guess you're going to get the dishwasher going on there. That's not a good energy.
It's the dilemma, right?
It is, yeah. I have to say, though, I think one thing that has helped me is a smart meter, because you can actually do some little experiments. I remember I did one with using an electric blanket versus using a hot water bottle in the middle of winter. If I boil a kettle, I need a reasonable amount of water to fill the hot water bottle versus keeping an electric blanket on, which certainly one I have is supposedly low energy use. The electric blanket used significantly less energy over a single, pretty much an entire kettle full of water being boiled.
How interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, the other obvious one is washing, using a washing machine, making sure if you can to try and fill it and, you know, reduce consumption that way. Massive, massive consumer in the home of energy. Yeah, I have to say, and just, you know, once in a while seeing, oh my God, how much am I spending, or how much has the energy use been today? And sometimes taking the decision even, can I do without the central heating going on at a certain point and putting it on a bit later? That sort of thing.
So it just takes being mindful.
Just being mindful. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Tuned in.
Taking simple actions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So listeners, let us know on the Facebook page what actions you're taking, and inspire us and give us ideas. Maybe we can share with each other new things to do that we haven't even thought of.
Absolutely. That would be wonderful. Mm. Mm-hmm.
That about wraps it up for this episode. Remember, you can connect with us in the Facebook group and for live intention holding in Clive's daily insight timer offerings, and with me in the Labyrinth Activist Network's Zoom calls. Details of how to hook up with these are in our show notes. Look out, too, for our next special topic episode, which we'll be releasing in the next few days. Thank you for listening and for sharing with us and holding intentions. We look forward to connecting again next time. And in the meantime,
thank you. Go well. Stay safe.
And remember, we're more powerful together.
Impact is presented by Ellen Vince and Clive Johnson and produced by Impact Productions. Our theme music is by Chris Collins and our logo artwork is by Auto Classic. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or your favorite podcast provider. We're a non-commercial podcast dedicated to people of any faith tradition or none who yearn for healing in our troubled world. Please pass on the word so others may join us in making an impact. Thank you for listening.